Because it is time to throw up
everybody
the signal.
Everybody knows. We don't need to do the
song. No one knows.
No one knows until right
Gordon,
now.
Gordon. Show.
Stop it.
Who is that?
Gordon.
No one knows his name.
Who's about to speak? Don't throw up a signal. I'm already here.
No, you're not.
I've been here since Gordon. The morning show.
Gordon.
Yep.
Gordon.
Yep. Okay, let's go ahead and start the content.
Sir,
it's time for content.
Oh, really?
Oh, look who it is.
I had no idea who was going to be here.
What is that oh, really from?
It's Gordon Keith.
From Campound a few years ago, wake up call.
Okay, all right, that makes sense.
That's right, it is.
I was about to say, it sounds like there's I'm in a restroom or something, but it's that hallway.
Yeah, I remember.
Oh, Campound. Really?
Sure. You're so dramatic.
I know.
How are you, man?
Remember that time I woke you up with a motorcycle?
I do remember that,
outside
yes.
Outside your room.
It was so loud.
Very jarring.
That's okay.
I probably did so much damage to my motorcycle, rev bombing it like that. It was not smart.
So what's up with the wardrobe change?
Yeah, why did you do that?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You usually are wearing black pants with black shoes and a black t-shirt every day.
I refuse to be
now,
typecast
all
like
of
that.
A sudden,
I don't.
You have on blue slip-on shoes with white tube socks and action pants. Is this like a midlife crisis?
Yeah.
Well, I feel like the cars and the
young.
Motorcycles and everything else is kind of in the...
The midlife crisis
handbook. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you've gone through that, like past that? Because
I've always had a kind of an issue with even the term midlife crisis.
Why is that?
Because how do you know when your midlife is?
Yeah, there's that. And because even when I was in my 20s, I was going through a crisis about mortality. It's like I never remember not being in crisis about mortality. And to me, it seems like it's imposing a narrative on something that doesn't need a narrative. It's like you're interested in things and you want to try new things, so you do that. And it's not because of a crisis. It's because you want to do it and you know that your time is limited right. on the earth.
But I think if you get to a certain point in your life where you haven't thought about it before and now, like I don't think in my 20s I was worried about. I don't think a lot of people are.
Well, I was.
I think you're.
And they even have a term for that now. It's quarter life crisis.
Nah,
they call.
I've never heard that.
Yes, that's absolutely
dumb.
Is.
I've heard it too.
Well, see, it's the same. I mean, it's just
no,
as
it's
smart
not.
As
very
the other
real.
One.
But I do think
you have four.
Oh, he's. You know what? He's going through an end of life crisis. He's wanting to travel back to his childhood home. Well,
right.
Why are we? Why does it have to be an end of life crisis? Why can't it just
exactly.
be that the person is wanting to go back and see someplace?
But I do feel like there's a certain age when you have that curiosity of certain things that's categorized as just that. Then when you build up the years, I feel like it is a little bit different. And maybe I'm alone in my thinking, but okay. If you're curious about something in your 20s, that's just the natural progression of how the mind works, I believe. But as you get older, in your 40s or whatever, and you start thinking, whoa, I'm in the third quarter. We were talking about this on the drive back from Austin this weekend. Like, man, we are firmly in the third quarter right now
right.
of life. If everything goes swimmingly, if you live a very long time, I'm in the third quarter. I'm out the halftime. We already had the performance,
mm-hmm.
and we're in the third quarter. It's not just the beginning of it. So when you think about it like that, I think that kind of heightens your mindset of, man, I haven't done these things. And some of those things that you want to do as a youth, maybe you're not capable of because you don't have the funds. You don't have the money to
Correct.
Explore that. And once you get to that certain point where you can, and then it's just, you know.
Yeah, I definitely think that the awareness of time – it can be a great impetus to get things done that you,
right.
you know, that you've been dragging your feet on or just hasn't been top of mind or hadn't been a priority for you. You know, my obvious complaint about it is why do we make it a pejorative and call it a midlife crisis, whereas it's a whole life crisis. In a sense, it's either a crisis or it's, you know, a whole life crisis or just a whole life situation of we all have a clock that's ticking down.
Right.
And if you're interested in stuff, you need to do the stuff you're interested in while you can. And we've made midlife crisis to be this thing that's you're supposed to make fun of people for doing new things or buying new things or having new experiences because they're in the middle of their life and they realize that they want to do things before they die.
Yeah.
And we make fun of them for that, which seems like an odd response to the fact that of something that we should be praising people for doing.
But I think we'll make fun of people for doing anything.
That's right. Yeah.
But I think overall, you'll embrace fun of the
old person who has always wanted to go to Europe and now they're going to Europe at the age of 67.
Man, I don't think a lot of people make fun of those people.
But that's what I'm saying.
I think you're saying, my God, that's great.
But why would we make fun of someone for doing something in midlife or quarter life or end of life in response to their own mortality?
I think it's a societal pressure because a lot of it, when you talk about a midlife crisis, it's the guy who bought the sports car or left his wife or did whatever.
And he has the rug and he's,
I think people
Well, like the sports car
stuck.
Thing is, in, well, the wife thing and all that, that's, that touches on different matters.
Right. Of course it does.
But like the guy who finally has enough money to buy the car that he always wanted when he was 20. And then we make fun of that guy for getting that car. That seems odd to me.
I would agree. I think some of it, though, is that people, I don't know if it's midlife crisis as much as an awakening of now I, to your point, I have the money, I have whatever it is where I've discovered I don't like the life I've been living. And now I feel I have the inner peace, the power, whatever you want to call it, to be able to make some of these choices. Now that I look at my life and say, man, I'm not really happy and I don't want to be here 5 years from now, 10 years from now. So I'm going to do these changes that shock other people because you go, well, man, you for 30 years, you've been living this way.
And other people can act offended because you're not behaving in the predictable manner that I've always been accustomed to. You're doing something different. What's up with that?
But I do.
And is it a crisis?
I do think, and it's probably not a crisis. It's probably not properly named.
Right.
I think a lot of people, you can't satisfy everyone, and you know that. And every time you do something, the thing that sticks with you the most is the criticism that you get. Mm-hmm. You could, I can go buy this Ferrari that I've always wanted. And there are 95 people that will say, my gosh, that's great. You know, awesome. I'm glad you have the opportunity to do that. And then there are five people that, midlife crisis, what's wrong with this dude? Yeah. But that's the one that sticks in your mind the most. You are really going with the loud minority that's talking badly about you instead of just living your life and doing your thing. It's, you can always say, I'm not worried about what other people will say. I'm going to do what I want to do. And that's a stone cold lie for about 95% of the population.
Yeah.
You 100% care of what other people think. And it affects you in such a way that it may cause you not to do it. Peer pressure is a bitch, man.
It is. And a lot of times, I think that a lot of things that we call midlife crisis is happens at a time when the person stops caring what other people think.
Yes.
It's like, I don't want to, I don't want to go out and get, start riding a motorcycle because, man, people will say that I'm a midlife crisis. So I need to make sure that for my one life on earth, I avoid that criticism and be the person who doesn't ride a motorcycle, who wants to, but doesn't do it because that way I can keep people happy on the internet or my friends or my periphery group that they won't criticize me for
the whispers behind your back, you know, if I all of a sudden I rolled in the next day and I had full sleeve of tattoos because that's something I always wanted to do. You get, oh man, you know, what are they going to say? What are they going to think if I do that?
Mm-hmm.
And I think you will free yourself if you don't actually worry about it and just live your life and do your thing.
And I think a lot of people get to that point. We spend so much of our lives concerned with what other people think. And then as you get older, a lot of times you will stop caring so much. And once you hit that tipping point where it's like, you know what? I do want to start rock climbing. I've always wanted to do it. And there are going to be people who say that, hey, oh, look, midlife, and all of a sudden he's going out and rock climbing. Here's a guy who hasn't done this his whole life, and he's starting something new. Uh-oh, midlife crisis.
Right, right.
And at the same time, I think a lot of people just say it because we're always trying to fill space with words. People, a lot of times in their criticism, don't even mean anything by it. They're just saying it because it's a comment that I can make.
And they kind of think it's funny, and they want
you to
laugh.
It's kind of funny.
It's everybody wants to be a comedian.
Right.
And if it's not affecting anyone negatively, then you go about it. If you go by, if you want to go ride motorcycles or climb rocks, that's on you, bro. What is that doing to me?
Thanks,
man. Why would I care about what you're doing? Now, if we're friends and we're cool, I may go, huh, you all right, man? Everything cool or something like that. But other than that, you know, I've got your back. It's fully supported. But you get to sometimes to where if I say, all right, you know what? I'm having a midlife crisis. Whoop, I'm going to get divorced. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And then it affects other people. And that's where it gets a little hairy, I think.
It can. But again, it goes to self, right? And how much do you value self? Because some people will say, well, that's just selfishness at play. But to some regard, I think that that is an important thing to actually have some selfishness at times in life to do what truly makes you happy, that other people may look at and be like, well, that can't possibly make you happy. You've been doing this for however many years or living your life this way, when you might finally feel you have the power to say, actually, I've always kind of wanted to do this, or I've changed my mind, or I've grown in a way in which this is no longer compatible, what have you. And people are afraid to do that because it's easier, like what you guys are saying, to appease those people.
And, you know, life is a balance. You know, the middle way is probably the right way, and you can't be totally selfish. You can't change your entire life and jettison everyone in your life and all that, because you live in relationship with other people, and you have to balance, you know, how much of yourself are you in service of and how much you're service of the other people. And it's hard to get that answer correct.
That's right. That's right.
You don't want to err on the side of being a doormat for everyone, and you don't want to be the supreme selfish Rick with a P. Yeah,
but you have responsibilities. You have kids. You have a wife. You have a family.
How do you thread that needle and navigate to have a meaningful life that's in service of others while still retaining your service to yourself?
Man, my dad tells me that all the time. You know, he got married really young. They were 20. My dad was into drag racing and cars, and he was still doing it when we first got married. And my sister and I were first born, and then realized, you know what? I can't keep up with this and then keep this family going. You know, we have to give up something, and he did. And it's one of those things to where if we were out the house and all of a sudden he wanted to go in the drag racing circuit, we'd say, oh, that's a midlife crisis. Like, man, I had to put that on pause for my whole entire life to raise my family. And now I kind of want to get into it to see if that's, you know, to kind of pick up where I left off. And I don't think anyone would have been upset about it, but I think you're right.
But it raises that question. Okay, but yeah, but you're a dad and you've got these. And he's like, yeah, but I put that on pause for all those years until now. Maybe I want to take back on a little bit of that risk because this is something that's meaningful to me now that I've got you raised and you guys are out of the house and launched into the world and all that. But yeah, it's always a delicate balance, and it's always something that you have to consider as to how much, because I know that riding a motorcycle is a risk for me.
Sure.
It's more dangerous than a car. So the enjoyment or the soul satisfaction you get out of it, how much is worth it? Is the juice worth the squeeze?
Have you always been the risk taker?
No, I would say that I've been more risk averse in my life.
Yeah, me too. And that's why I wouldn't even think about if you ever saw me on that, call 911.
On a motorcycle?
Yeah.
Go riding with me. I'll teach you to ride.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, go ride.
Do you ride a bike? Did you ride a bike a lot?
Yeah, of course.
During the time when you grew up, every kid rode a bike. Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it's quite as common anymore, but.
And it didn't feel risky riding a bike.
Which
a motorcycle,
is weird.
Now, you know, kids, you just, like when we went skiing the one time, and as adults that are first learning how to ski are arms out and they're wobbly and they're shaking. Yes. There's a 3-year-old that's just zooming right back. Mm-hmm. They don't care. They don't have any fear.
Right.
It's just how that goes down.
They're not in their head about the risk of it.
Right.
They're just doing
it. All we're thinking about. If I fall, I'm going to break something. If I do this, I'm going to hurt myself.
Yeah. You know what? I've had a very strange reaction to lately for the past few weeks. I've been riding a scooter, which is a small, you know, it's a motorcycle, but it's a small displacement motorcycle. I think the top speed is probably only 45 miles an hour. For whatever reason, I'm riding that on streets, and I feel safer on that than I do on my motorcycle, even though I'm traveling around the same speed a lot of times on both of those, because the scooter comes with it a different set of expectations. It's framed in my mind as, well, this is a lower speed thing, and it seems like cars also kind of give grace to the scooter that they don't to the motorcycle.
Definitely not the motorcycle. You're right, and I don't know why that is.
I don't know why that is either.
I think
both
I'm the
two
same way.
Wheels, and
I'm
they're
the
both,
same way.
You know, I don't know what's going on with that, but the scooter feels like a safer proposition.
It does.
Than the motorcycle.
Yeah, mentally, if you're just on a city street, not even the highway, if you're just going from your house to the store and you don't ever get on a highway, you see a guy on a scooter, you go, oh, well, I need, yeah. he needs extra space, or there's,
right.
there is something.
But a motorcycle, because like, what is this guy doing, man? Right. What is he doing?
Right.
Like, oh, great, I bet he's going to blare his music at me. I got to listen to him and his loud engine next to me in traffic or whatever.
It goes from bike to scooter and then motorcycle. They get no love at all.
Yeah, that's so
and I'm
so right.
I'm the same way, and I don't know why my thinking is. Is
that way. And maybe I think because the way that you sit on the scooter, it just looks so nerdy.
Yeah, it's so nerdy, and it's not intimidating.
It's hello, like just a little. Oh, he's so. Are you okay? Can I help you?
You're all right, buddy. Hey, I'll give you wide bird here and everything. That's cool, man. You go.
Maybe the different type of helmet. You just don't look intimidating. I mean,
I'll be at four-way stops, and people wave me through if I'm on the scooter. It's like they're all trying to help me
on a motorcycle. I mean, you stay right
on a motorcycle. Good lord, man, dude.
I got right. Angel, away, like this is it.
That is wild. Maybe I have to just
your motorcycle is not a Harley or anything, is it?
No, I just have like it's a dual sport motorcycle. Yeah. It kind of looks like a dirt bike, but it's street legal.
Hmm. But there's something about the motorcycle mentality that when you see one, you're like, oh, okay. This guy.
Look at this guy. Oh, Jesus, this guy.
Weaving in and out of traffic. Who do he think he is? Huh?
But scooter motorists are nicer to me. And for whatever reason, in my own mind, when I'm riding that thing, I don't feel as endangered, and I makes zero sense because I'm still going 45 miles an hour, which I'm often going on my motorcycle. But on my motorcycle, I'm like much more tense and looking around, looking at all these cars. And I know these cars are going to jump out at me on the motorcycle.
Yeah.
But I don't quite feel that on the stupid little 2-stroke 50cc scooter.
Well, I mean, are you still wearing your slip-ons on the scooter or no?
You know, that's the other thing. Right. So on the motorcycle, down? I'm what's called at-gat, all the gear all the time. I wear my helmet. I wear my, armored pants.
Yeah.
I wear an air vest even. I wear a jacket that has armor in it as well. So I'm all the gear, all the protective gear. On the scooter, I'll wear the jacket and the helmet. And then, I'll just wear regular footwear and everything. Once again, it's this expectation is different with me, and I find myself completely enjoying this lack of, I guess, safety concern on the scooter. It feels so much lower stakes.
It's because of the horn.
Meet me. Meet me. Meet me.
Maybe it is. Meet me. All right, put up the signal.
The end.
Hey.
All right. We don't need the song even at the end.
It's going. Everybody, join in.
You just do the tease for your next segment, and we're done. What's coming up next, Donnie? What's coming up next? You don't need to sing.
Own a scooter.
We've already heard the song a million times. So once again, this is valuable time. We could sell this for commercial space.
Scooter, 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 scooter.
That didn't help anyone.
Gordon. Let's get some college football next here on The Ticket.